Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series at toughmantri.com, by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, by Polar, chase your destiny, by Premium Plus Sports, the best travel agency out there, by USA-SwimRun.com. If you haven't tried a swim-run event, give one a try, grab a buddy. You won't be disappointed. Great events. Our Challenge Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million to keep challenge athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest has had a pretty phenomenal year. Overall champion at Ironman Lake Placid. Age group champion, Ironman Copenhagen, 8:27. That's unbelievable. His name is Ed Baker. Ed, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. Thanks so much for having me today.
Wow, it's a pleasure. So, growing up, endurance sports, was that a big part of your life?
So, I've been a runner my entire life. Probably started in elementary school when we would do the one-mile race every year with my class.
Yep.
And I always tended to do well in that race versus some of the other sports, I wasn't quite as good. So in middle school, I decided to try out for the cross-country team, and that was when I got started. And I continued to run in high school and ran competitively at Harvard, where I was captain of the cross-country team.
Wow.
And then actually continued running after that for a few years. I moved up to the marathon and ran the marathon for a few years, qualifying for the Olympic trials back in 2007.
So PR?
My marathon PR was 2:21, and my half marathon PR was 105.17.
105.
But that was over 10 years ago, you know. And then I had a decade of my life where life kind of got in the way, and I got out of shape.
Well, let's talk about that. So, and where did you grow up?
Well, I lived in California until I was 13 in the Bay Area, Palo Alto.
Yeah.
And then my family moved to Jacksonville, Florida, which is where I went to high school. And then after that, came up to the Boston area for college, and finally back out to the Bay Area for business school about 10 years ago. And then just last year, moved to Boston, where I originally met my wife. And we now have three kids and a fourth on the way, back in the Boston area, enjoying the seasons and the cold winters.
So you're you captain of the team, captain of cross country team, and so out of college you run some marathons, and then did you went right into big business?
Yeah, so I went to business school out at Stanford in 2006.
Yep.
And kind of 2007 was the Olympic trials for the marathon, so I was able to compete there. But after that, I kind of felt like, all right, I think I've hit my peak.
Right.
And I was just graduating from business school, about to start a company, and also just got married. Then we started having kids, and, you know, life got so busy that I just kind of stopped my workout routine.
So did you gain some weight?
You know, I actually, my weight fluctuated. I gained some weight for a while, then I lost some weight. I tried being vegetarian for a while, and I think I wasn't very good about eating enough protein. I was working so hard, I wasn't getting enough sleep. So after starting a company, after business school, I actually ended up working at Facebook and then at Uber, and I was just working crazy long hours and really getting out of shape.
Well, and you were there, right, in the formative years, right? Now, did you start your own app? Is that how a lot of it started?
I started a website called Friendly.ly, which was a Facebook Connect site, so you could sign up for it using Facebook.
Yeah.
This was back in 2008. We worked on that for 3 years and then sold the company to Facebook. And I ended up joining Facebook through that acquisition. where I worked for a couple of years before heading over to Uber.
So then you're working at Uber. And when did the whole concept of triathlon come into your world?
You know, really just in the past year. So I left Uber in March of 2017, mm-hmm. so a year and a half ago. And I started, I first started getting on the bike and training on Zwift. So, but I hadn't yet started to swim. And so I was starting to get back into shape on the bike thinking, you know, I'm getting older. I'm 39 years old. Or I guess back then I was 38, but I was thinking I need something that's lower impact because
right.
I don't think my joints can take all the miles they used to.
You're a smart guy. Yeah, I always tell people the orthopedic reality is every runner eventually needs to get on a bike.
Yeah, it's true. And I learned the hard way. I had several injuries and I just thought, okay, the bike might be one way to still get in some endurance training without killing my joints. So, and then I started going on this bike ride with a group on Wednesdays out in the Bay Area called the Stall Ride. And we'd bike out to Half Moon Bay and do this long kind of 80 to 90 mile ride every Wednesday. And several of the people on that ride were triathletes and also swimmers. And as I was talking to some of them, one of them convinced me to come out for master's practice last summer at Stanford. So I still remember going to my first master's practice, and it kicked my butt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
it was painful. I went in the 145, or I started off in the 140 per 100-meter lane and just couldn't keep up. Moved to the 145 lane next, still had trouble keeping up.
Yep.
So
I started with the pregnant women.
Okay.
Yeah, I started in that lane and got my butt kicked there for about a year before moving up, you know, and moving. Yeah. It's humbling. You come out there for swimming.
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I thought, hey, I have the cardiovascular shape. I should be all right.
But, no, it's all technique.
And I didn't realize just how important that technique is. And that's something I've really been focusing on over the past year.
When did you connect with Matt Dixon?
So Matt and I connected in the winter of last year. So I think we had coffee maybe in December of 2017, and he agreed to be my coach starting in January of this year. I was told if you could convince Matt to be your coach, do it, but he probably will say no.
It's true.
somehow I convinced him to say yes, and he started working with me in January and actually invited me to come out to his pro training camp, which was in Scottsdale, Arizona this year, in late January. And that was a pretty amazing experience for me as a new triathlete, just to see how these pro athletes train and just experience that.
Well, and also to find out, as a guy who's been a business guy, to find out how, wait, you're a professional triathlete and you make what?
Right.
It's not the best business. It's not a vertical business move for a guy who's been at Facebook and Uber.
I guess you probably don't do it for the money. And I think no matter who you talk to, regardless of what kind of work they did before, I think it's passion first and money second is the sense that I get.
So at this point, are you focused full time on triathlon or you have some other work related things going as well?
I'm still working as a consultant and advisor to a number of startups.
Sweet.
But I have flexibility because I'm able to work from home quite a bit. So I end up, it gives me the flexibility and time to get in the training. And for example, on Wednesdays, I tend to do my endurance days and I try not to schedule any meetings on Wednesdays. This past Wednesday, I did 7 hours of training, which, I guess a lot of people do on the weekends, but I try to do it in the middle of the week.
Right. Especially as a parent, because the kids are at school, right. And that way you can spend time with your kids on the weekend.
Exactly. Exactly.
So your wife hasn't killed you yet at this point?
Not yet. You know, she's been an amazingly supportive, and I would not be able to do this without her.
No.
That's an understatement. And she's 8.5 months pregnant right now. The baby is literally going to come any day now. I've got my phone by my side 24/7. So if I get a call in the middle of this interview, I'll let you know.
What are the ages of the kids?
They are 7, 6, and 3.
Oh, my God.
And a newborn. Yeah, we'll have, wow. And a 0-year-old.
A zero. Wow. What was your first race?
My first race, this year, my first race was the Texas 70.3 in April.
Yeah.
I had done one Olympic triathlon several years ago with some coworkers that I didn't really train for, but I just wanted to give it a try. And then I also, last year, before I moved back to Boston, I did the swim and the bike of the Santa Cruz 70.3, but I was injured, so I couldn't actually do the run.
Right.
So my first true 70.3 was in Texas this year.
And how was that experience? What'd you learn from that?
It was definitely an eye-opening experience. One thing I learned is, gosh, it's a lot harder to run after swimming and biking than it is when you don't have to do those things before running.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, oh, half marathon, no big deal. But, man, those first few miles of that half, I just was in so much pain, and my legs just weren't moving.
And you're going, whose legs are these? These certainly don't feel like, they don't feel like mine at all. When did they turn to concrete?
Exactly. Yeah. But I was just happy to have finished it and treated it as a great learning experience.
Well, and then in June, you went Mont Tremblant, 70.3,
right.
409, first 35, right. 39, yeah. Second overall amateur. Now, at that point, when you start going second overall amateur in an Ironman branded event, that's got to make you think, you know what, I'm pretty good at this.
I felt pretty good about that race. And another thing it made me realize is, gosh, my coach knows what he's doing, you know, and there have been times where I have argued with Matt about some of the training and saying, why aren't you giving me more? I want to do more. And I'm glad he pushes back, and I'm glad I've been following his advice, because I think I probably would have gotten injured by now if I hadn't.
Yeah, and that's the deal is most age group athletes just basically do twice as much as they should be doing. And they forget that they're balancing. Oh, yeah, you're a father of three. You're consulting. You've got a lot of other stuff. The pros are the pros. That's what they're doing full time. So then when you go to Lake Placid and you win overall.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise. So, in fact, the original plan that I worked on with my coach was to not move up to the full Ironman until next year, because Matt said, let's focus on the 70.3 this year, move up to the full next year. However, when we got pregnant and the baby was due in September, we realized I'm not going to be going to South Africa the same month the baby's due. But my wife said, you know, if you can qualify for Kona, the baby should be born by then and you can go to Kona. So we kind of changed the plan mid-season. And I actually signed up for both Lake Placid and Copenhagen so that I'd have two shots at hopefully qualifying for Kona, because Matt warned me, you know, your first Ironman, you can't really count on anything. So his advice to me going into that race was treat it like a long day of training. Whatever you do, do not race it. And he said, if you are going to race it, don't race it until those last 6 miles of the run. That is the point at which I will give you permission to start racing. And I think what he knew, which I learned the hard way, was those last 6 miles, I'm just like trying to hang on, trying not to drop onto the ground.
Those last couple miles, were you by yourself or was there somebody with you? Did you have to race?
I was by myself for most of the run, actually. So for the bike, we finished... I finished around the same time as another age group athlete. But then on the run, I just started, I felt good at the beginning of the run. And I think I looked at my watch thinking I'd see 7:30 for my first mile. And it was like 6:30.
Wow.
And then I thought to myself, okay, I better slow down a little bit. I'm not going to probably be able to hold this for 26 miles. but I did kind of pull ahead early on in the run and pretty much was running on my own. There was a guy on a bicycle next to me.
Yeah.
So that was nice to have his company.
Well, also, make sure you're going the right way. You're like, I'm leading. I can't be leading. I've got to be off the course. So when was the last time you won a race?
Oh, gosh. Good question. Well,
college?
It's been so long. I mean, I think I won some road races and stuff after college. I think I may maybe run. You know, I really can't remember actually. But
So you got to break the finish line tape. You got to come
a
legendary Ironman event, Ironman Lake Placid. You came in the stadium basically, winning the race and breaking the tape.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool feeling. You know, although I actually, when I first entered the stadium, I thought I was done already, and I stopped for a second.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, wait, no, I have to run around the stadium. So I kind of ran around and broke the tape. And I remember my coach telling me before the race, he said, whatever you do at the end of your first Ironman, soak it up, because you'll only do your first Ironman once in your life, and you're going to want those memories, and just like, just take a moment to soak it up, take it all in. So that was another thing I was trying to do as I crossed that finish line.
So I'm assuming Matt was probably watching online, but if he wasn't, when you, that first conversation with him was like, so how'd you do? Oh, I won. What was that like?
He had seen the results already by the time I got on the phone with him. And he said, not bad.
Not bad.
I think he knows how to coach me. He knows that he's got to make sure I stay humble. And that's something he continues to emphasize. And yes, I did have a great outcome at that race, but I know I'm still just getting started. And I mean, I shouldn't just look at that one outcome as, okay, I've done it, I've accomplished it, you know? So, Matt's been really good at reminding me, like, you're not actually as good as you think you are.
I love that. Yeah. Matt can do that. Matt can break people down pretty easily. So, so you'd not done an Ironman before this year, and then you go to Placid and go 9:18. Then you go and you're age group champion at Ironman Copenhagen 8:27. When you start going sub-9 as an age grouper, that's a real deal. And one, you hadn't done any Ironman. Now, in a few weeks, you're going to be going to Kona to do your third one of the year.
Yeah, I know. It's a bunch of Ironman races in a pretty short amount of time. And, you know, at Copenhagen, once again, I went into it with kind of no expectations. And we decided, Matt and I decided I should treat it as another hard day of training, especially with Kona coming up. I didn't want to try to peak for Copenhagen and then have that interrupt the training for Kona. So we kind of just trained right through it. And it was a fast course. You know, it wasn't nearly as hilly as Lake Placid. So, you know, really fast bike split. The run was quite flat as well. So I think the 51-minute PR had a lot more to do with the course than, you know, than me suddenly getting in much better shape. But it was a cool experience there as well.
What was your run split there at Copenhagen?
My run split was just under 2:59.
Oh my God. Wow. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And what do you have a time goal for Kona, or is it like, listen, this is my first world championship, let's just savor it?
Yeah, no time goal, no place goal, nothing like that. Really just my main goal is to cross that finish line and hopefully look back and say I did the best I could have done on that day. And you know, I'm scared of Kona. I know how hot it's going to be. I know I've heard it gets very windy.
Oh yeah.
You know, this will be my first time there, so I really just want to have that experience and treat it as a learning experience.
How far ahead of time will you get there?
I'll get there about a week ahead of time.
That's plenty. Yeah. A lot of people go.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, especially since you'll be having a new baby at home. You really can't leave too early.
That's right.
Honey.
Matt
says I need a month in Kona.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she's not falling for that.
And I just hope the baby's born before I'm planning to leave, because if it isn't, I might get there even later.
Exactly. So what have you learned about yourself through all this? Obviously, you had so much success as a business guy and as a runner in college and you know, running 2:21 marathon and 105 half. How has this been different, and what have you learned about yourself through this process?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, one thing that's very different this time around is I'm much older. You know, I'm 39 years old. Next year I'll be 40. And, you know, I kind of had convinced myself I had already hit my peak a decade ago. And, but, you know, I decided I was going to give it another shot. And what's been interesting for me is just discovering a lot of things I didn't know before about training. I thought back when I was racing in college and then the marathon and half marathon, I thought I kind of had it all figured out. But this time around, once again, largely thanks to my coach and other people that have helped me learn a lot about this sport, I've realized how important things like sleep and nutrition and kind of your strength training and kind of nailing all the basics, how important that is, especially as an older athlete. I think that stuff's even more important now in terms of making sure I give my body time to recover and not just every day going as hard as I can in every single workout. And, you know, by being a bit smarter about how I train and how I recover, I think I've actually been able to progress a lot more than I did back when I was younger.
I was going to say, so it's almost like you look back and go, hey, I ran 221, I ran 105. Just think if I incorporated some of this stuff back then, if I knew about getting on the Zwift, or I've had a trainer and basically ran less and incorporated, you know, more swimming and cycling, maybe I could run faster.
Totally. I wish I had known that back then, you know, but at least I'm learning that now.
Exactly.
And I think the great thing about the triathlon and the Ironman is it feels like a sport you can continue to do for many, many years, you know, and I love that there are age group categories. And to me, some of the most inspirational parts of the Ironman have been seeing the people come up accepting their awards in the, you know, 70 plus age group.
Yep.
And I just love, I mean, I look at them and they inspire me. So I love that this is a sport we can keep doing for many, many years.
It's funny. I've always said this sport is the fountain of youth. This sport can keep you young forever. And we were just in Cleveland at the national championships, USA Triathlon National Championships. I'm in the, I call the 65 to death category. And it was 120 guys signed up in the 65 to 69 category. 120.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean,
that's amazing.
It is. But that's so cool. You know, back in the day, it would be 50 plus would be the highest age division. Then it became 55, 60 plus. And now they have 90, 94, 95 to 99, right? You never know.
Oh my goodness.
Well,
wow.
It does. It does keep you young. You can do it forever and ever. Hey, Ed, it's great to have you in the sport, and especially a guy with your background, because I bet you there's a lot of other CEOs and a lot of other business execs who can learn from watching what you're doing, right? This has to help you business-wise as well, just in terms of feeling good about yourself.
I think it does. And what I've found is it kind of goes both ways. There are a lot of parallels between things I've done in the business world that have allowed me to be successful there and things I've applied to training for the triathlon. And that for me has been really interesting to kind of learn and apply things from one world to the other world.
So going from Facebook to Uber, was there in terms of two obviously giants in that industry, was it that different in terms of what you were doing? Talk a little bit about the cultures of the two companies.
Sure. It was quite a bit different at the time I made the switch, because this was back in 2013 and Facebook was already a pretty big company that everyone knew about. Uber back then was actually still a startup that a lot of people hadn't heard about. I remember telling my parents I was leaving Facebook to go to the startup called Uber, and they said, "What's Uber do?" And I explained it to them and they said, "Oh, I don't think that would ever work in Florida."
Right.
These days they use it all the time in Florida, you know. So it was there were about 100 people in the headquarters in San Francisco back when I joined Uber, and there wasn't even a desk for me. I had to kind of sit in between a couple of other people, like, and share their, you know, have two desks shared by three people. So it definitely was like a small, scrappy startup when I joined. And then when I left about 3.5 years later, it was over 12,000 people were working at the company. And it did, at that point, feel a lot more like Facebook did at the time I was at Facebook.
When you first heard the ride-sharing concept, did you right away go, oh, okay, that's a great idea? Or were you thinking, oh, who's going to get in some stranger's car? That sounds really weird.
You know, it was the first time I used Uber, I realized, wow, this is magical.
Yeah.
I can press a button on my phone and a car shows up and I can take that somewhere. You know, like, it sounds obvious now, but
right.
Back then, the very first time you used it, it was one of those magical moments. And then I would speak with the drivers and they would say, this is amazing. I have a new way to make a living.
Right.
And so kind of on both sides, it just felt like this magical product. And for me, more than anything else, that was what got me excited about joining the company.
So are you on the lookout for that next major or next company that you want to go all in on?
I'm definitely keeping my eyes open. There's one company I've gotten involved with as an advisor and investor called Lime. They used to be called Lime Bike. Now they're Lime because they do bikes and scooters.
I know Lime. I am.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's, to me, that's, I think, kind of the closest to the next Uber of all the companies I've seen out there. And it's been a really exciting company to work with. And, you know, they're based out in the Bay Area, and I live in Boston now. But I've been working with them, and it's been really fun.
I think the one challenge I loved seeing the city bikes, where you pick a bike from a docking station, you ride to another docking station. The yep. thing with the Lime bikes, and we've got Lime and a couple of the brands in San Diego, and people yep. you know, they sort of drop them anywhere. And yep. then you've got bikes all over the place. I think they just have
that's
to figure
right.
that part out. That, you know,
I think you're right. I mean, it's a pro and a con. On
yes.
the one hand, it feels like they're kind of littering the streets, but on the other hand, it's so convenient to be able to not have to find the docking station when you want to pick one up or drop one off.
Right.
So there's probably a happy medium somewhere in between.
I think so. I think they'll figure that out. But I love the concept. You just, you know, you yeah. look on your phone. Oh, there's a bike a block away. That's perfect.
That's right.
I love that. Very
yeah.
cool. Hey, Ed, congratulations on everything you've accomplished. I can't believe you went from no Ironman to you'll be doing your third and you qualified for Kona and won Lake Placid and went 8:27. Wow. It's amazing to have someone come in and basically just do so well right away. It's great. It's great for the sport.
Well,
actually, especially somebody with real business savvy in his background, because I'm sure you're going to look at this sport and go, huh, more people should be involved with this sport. This sport is pretty special.
Yeah, it's incredible. I wish I had discovered it even earlier in my life, but it's been a really exciting journey so far. And, you know, I it's just beginning for me. You've been doing this for decades. For me, it's really my first year, and so
right.
I'm just always excited to talk to people like yourself and others who have been doing this for so long and who have so much experience that I can learn from, because I'm still just a beginner, you know, and I know I've got a lot to learn.
Well, obviously, from your times, you don't have a heck of a lot to learn, and what you're doing is showing people that, you know what, with the right type of training and the right type of background, you can come in and have success right away, which is mm-hmm. awesome. Hey, Ed, I look forward yeah. to seeing you in Kona.
Okay, look forward to seeing you then. Thanks
I love
so much,
it.
Bob.
Ed Baker's
okay.
been our guest. Again, we're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, VeloFix, Polar, Chase Your Destiny, Premium Plus Sports, Swim Run USA, that's usa-swimrun.com, our Challenge Athletes Foundation. We have now raised over $100 million and sent out over 23,000 grants in our first 25 years. Check us out at challengeathletes.org. And all of our interviews are available on babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.